It was an old boy of William's school, Mr. Welbecker, who offered a prize to the form that should act a scene from Shakespeare most successfully. The old boy in question had written an article on Shakespeare, which had appeared in the local press, and he thought it well to immortalise his name by instituting the Welbecker Shakespeare Acting Shield in his old school. The headmaster and the staff received his offer without enthusiasm. To make matters worse, Mr. Welbecker arrived at the school one morning, unheralded, armed with innumerable copies of his article on Shakespeare, privately printed and bound, and offered to give a lecture on Shakespeare to the school. The headmaster hastily said that it was impossible, but that he might like to give his lecture to 3A, whose teacher had suddenly been taken ill. A sudden silence greeted the entry of Mr. Welbecker into William's classroom.
Now, boys, he said breezily, I want to give you a little talk about Shakespeare. I'm what you might call an expert on the subject. I've written a little book, some copies of which I'm going to give to the boys who seem to me to show the most intelligence. I'm sure they will always be among your greatest treasures, because, it isn't everyone who can write a book, you know, is it?
I've written a book, put in William nonchalantly. It was about a pirate called Dick of the Bloody Hand, and he started off in search of adventure, and he came to...
Yes, said Mr. Welbecker hastily, but I just want to tell you a little bit about Shakespeare first. Now, the theory I incline to is that Bacon wrote the plays of Shakespeare.
I wrote a play once, said William, and people acted it, but they all forgot their parts, so it didn't come to much, but it was a jolly fine play all the same.
I wish you wouldn't keep interrupting, said Mr. Welbecker testily.
Most of the class had by now settled down to their own devices, quiet or otherwise. But William considered himself a literary character and was quite willing to give a hearing to a brother artist.
Well,
said Mr. Welbecker, gazing round at his audience and returning at last reluctantly to William,
I repeat that I incline to the theory that the plays of Shakespeare were written by Bacon.
How could they be? Said William.
I've already said that I wish you wouldn't keep interrupting, snapped the lecturer.
Yes, but how could that other man, Ham...
I said Bacon.
Well, it's nearly the same, said William. Well, how could this man, Bacon, write them if Shakespeare wrote them?
Ah, but you see, I don't believe that Shakespeare did write them, said Mr. Welbecker mysteriously.
Well, why has he got his name printed on all the books, then, said William? And if this other man, Eggs...
I said Bacon...
Well, Bacon, then, said William. Well, if this man Bacon wrote them, they wouldn't put this man Shakespeare's name on the books. The only way he could have done it was by poisoning this man Shakespeare and then stealing his plays. That's what I'd have done anyway, if I'd been him and I'd wanted to say I'd written them.
That's all nonsense, said Mr. Welbecker sharply. Now, boys, I want you all, please, to listen to me.
No one responded. Dejectedly, Mr. Welbecker returned to his sole auditor.
I want first to tell you the story of the play of which you're all going to act a scene for the shield that I am presenting. Now, there was a man called Hamlet.
You just said he was called Bacon, said William.
I did not say he was called Bacon.
Oh, yes, excuse me, you did, said William politely. When I called him Ham, you said it was Bacon, and now you're calling him Ham yourself.
This was a different man, said Mr. Welbecker. Now, listen, this man was called Hamlet, and his uncle had killed his father because he wanted to marry his mother.
What did he want to marry his mother for? Said William. I've never heard of anyone wanting to marry their mother.
It was Hamlet's mother he wanted to marry.
Oh, that man that you think wrote the plays.
No, that was Bacon.
Well, you said it was Ham a minute ago. Whenever I say it's Bacon, you say it's Ham. And whenever I say it's Ham, you say it's Bacon. I don't think you know which his name was.
Will you listen? Said the distraught lecturer. This man, Hamlet, decided to kill his uncle.
Why?
I told you, because his uncle had killed his father.
Whose father?
Hamlet's. Now, there's a beautiful girl in the play called Ophelia, and Hamlet had once wanted to marry her.
You just said he wanted to marry his mother.
I did not. I wish you'd listen. Then he went mad, and this girl fell into the river. It was supposed to be an accident, but probably...
He pushed her in, supplied William.
Who pushed her? Demanded Mr. Welbecker irritably.
Well, I thought you were going to say that that man Bacon pushed her in.
Hamlet, you mean?
I tell you what, said William confidingly, let's say Eggs for both of them. Then we shan't get so muddled. Eggs means whichever of them it was.
Rubbish!
Exploded the lecturer. But just at that minute, the bell rang. Preparation for the Shakespeare acting competition continued apace. Mr. Welbecker had chosen Act 2, Scene 1 to be acted for the shield.
I'm not going to be the woman that gets pushed into a pond, said William firmly.
I don't mind being the one that pushes her, and I don't mind being the one called Ham that poisoned Shakespeare. I don't much mind which of them I am, so long as I've got a lot to say. When I'm in a play, I like to have a lot to say. His interest in the play was increased by the fact that Dorinda Lane was once more staying at her aunt's in the village. Dorinda was a little girl with dark hair and dimples who was the temporary possessor of William's heart, a hard-boiled organ that generally scorned thraldom to any woman. "I'm going to be in a play at school," he informed her the morning after Mr. Welbecker's lecture. She gave a little cry of excitement. Her admiration of William was absolute and unmixed. "Oh, William," she said, "how lovely. What are you going to be?"
"I'm not quite sure," said William. "But anyway, I'm going to be the most important person in it."
"Oh, are you, William?"
"Yes, I'm going to be the one that poisons bacon or that pushes ham into a pond or something like that."
"Oh, William," said Dorinda, "I think you're wonderful."
William's surprise and disgust were unbounded when his form master told him that he was to be one of the attendants on the king and that as such he would not be required to say anything at all.
"You just go in, first of all, and stand by the throne and then go out when the king goes out."
"But I want to say something," protested William.
"I've no doubt you do."
His form master was adamant. He was to be one of the king's attendants, and he was not to say anything. It was a chance remark of William's father that sent a ray of light into the gloom of the situation. It happened that this same play was being acted at a London theatre, and that the actor who should have played Hamlet had been taken ill, and the part was played by another member of the cast at the last minute.
"This other fellow knew the part," said his father, "so he stepped into the breach."
"Why did he do that?" said William.
"Do what?" asked his father.
"Step into that thing you said."
"What thing?"
"Well, you just said he stepped into something."
"I said he played the part."
"Well, you said he stepped into something, and I thought perhaps he broke it, like Robert did stepping into one of the footlights when he was acting in that play the football club did."
His father's only reply was a grunt that was obviously intended to close the conversation.
But William's way now lay clear before him. He would learn Hamlet's part, and on the night of the play, when Hamlet was taken ill, he would come forward to play the part for him.
"And I won't go messing about stepping into things, same as the one in London did," he said sternly.
In William's eyes, the part of Hamlet consisted solely of the to-be-or-not-to-be speech. "If I learn that, I'll be all right," he told himself. "I could just make up the rest, just say what comes into my head when they say things to me."
"Are you really going to be the hero, William?" said Dorinda, when next she met him.
Yes. I have a speech that takes hours and hours to say. I stand in the middle of the stage and I go on talking and talking, saying the things in this speech with no one stopping me or interrupting me, for hours, because I'm the person the whole play's written about."
"Oh, William, how lovely. Is it funny? Will it make me laugh? I love funny things."
William considered. For all he knew, the speech might be intended to be humorous. On the other hand, of course, it might not be. Having no key to its meaning, he could not tell.
"You'll have to wait and see," he said. "To be or not to be," he declaimed in his bedroom each night. "That is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the slings to suffer the mind and arrows of opposing fortune, and by opposing, end there."
Even William did not pretend to get every word in its exact place. As he said to himself, "It's as sensible as what's in the book anyway, and it sounds all right." The day of the performance dawned. No news of any sudden illness of the boy actually playing Hamlet reached William, yet he still felt no doubt. His star had marked him out for Hamlet, and Hamlet he would be. His mother saw him off for the performance. She herself was coming later as part of the audience. William considered that his mother had made him set off quite a quarter of an hour too soon, and therefore he had a quarter of an hour to spend in Croom Woods on the way. But even William realised on emerging from the wood that he had spent in it more than the quarter of an hour that he considered his due. He ran in the direction of the school. An excited group of people were standing at the gate looking out for him. They received him with a stream of indignant reproaches and bundled him into his form room. All the others were ready in their costumes. Hamlet looked picturesque in black velvet wearing a silver chain. William's legs were being thrust into tights by one person, his hair was being mercilessly brushed by another, and his face was being made up by another. "Now, don't forget," said the form master, who was also the producer, "you go on first of all and stand by the throne, stand quite stiffly as I showed you, and in a few moments the king and the others will come on." And William, his faculties still in a whirl, was thrust unceremoniously upon the empty stage.
He stood there, facing a sea of upturned, intent faces. Among them, in the second row, he discerned that of Dorinda, her eyes fixed expectantly upon him. Instinctively, and without a moment's hesitation, he stepped forward and with a sweeping gesture launched into his speech. "To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer..." "Come off, you young fool," hissed the formmaster wildly from behind the scenes. But William had got well into his stride and was not coming off for anyone. "The stings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles." The best thing, of course, would have been to lower the curtain, but there was no curtain to lower. "Come off, I tell you," repeated the formmaster frantically. "And by opposing, end there. To sleep, to die." William had forgotten everything in the world but himself, his words, and Dorinda. He was unaware of the crowd of distraught players hissing and gesticulating off stage. He was unaware of his formmaster's frenzied commands, of the frozen faces of the headmaster and Mr. Welbecker, who sat holding his shield ready for presentation in the front row. "No more! And by a sleep, to say an end!" The formmaster decided to act. The boy had evidently gone mad. The only thing to do was to go boldly onto the stage and drag him off. This the formmaster attempted to do. He stalked onto the stage and put out his hand to seize William. William, vaguely aware that someone was trying to stop him saying his speech, reacted promptly and dodged to the other side of the stage, still continuing his recital. "The thousand natural shocks, the flesh and hair is..." The formmaster, whose blood was now up, plunged across the stage. Once more William dodged his outstretched hand and, still breathlessly reciting, reached the other end of the stage again. Then followed the diverting spectacle of the formmaster chasing William round the stage, William dodging, doubling back, and all the time continuing his speech. Someone had the timely idea of trying to set up some screens, but William, still reciting, merely dodged round and behind them, and unfortunately one of them fell down on top of the formmaster. A mighty roar ascended from the audience. Dorinda was rocking to and fro with mirth and clapping with all her might and main. The unseemly performance came to an end at last. The players joined the formmaster in the chase, and William, still reciting, was dragged ingloriously from the stage to almost universal applause. Mr. Welbecker turned a purple face to the headmaster. "This is an outrage," he said. "An insult! I shouldn't dream of presenting my shield to a school in which I've seen this exhibition." "I agree that it's a most regrettable incident, Welbecker," said the headmaster suavely, "and I think that in the circumstances your decision is amply justified." Dorinda was wiping tears of laughter from her eyes. "Wasn't William wonderful?" she said. Mrs. Brown had crept out of the hall at the beginning of the incident and was pretending to herself and everyone else that she had not gone to the performance at all and so knew nothing about it. It was, of course, felt by the staff that someone ought to deal drastically with William. But it was so difficult not to regard him as a public benefactor. The thought of the annual Welbecker Shield Shakespeare competition had begun to assume the proportion of a nightmare in the minds of an already overworked staff. Besides, school broke up the next day. A fortnight after the end of term, William went to tea with Dorinda, a magnificent cross-country journey involving a train ride and two bus rides. Dorinda's mother supplied a sumptuous tea, and William, watched admiringly by Dorinda, did full justice to it. "Dorinda so much enjoyed that play at your school, William," said Dorinda's mother, watching the rapid disappearance of an iced cake with dispassionate wonder. "She said when she came home that she never laughed so much in all her life. She couldn't remember much of the plot, but she said it was awfully funny. It was a farce, wasn't it?"
Yes," said William, unwilling to admit that he did not know what the word farce meant.
"What was it called? We used to act a lot of farces when I was young." William gazed frowningly into the distance.
"I've forgotten," he said.
Then his face cleared.
"Oh, yes, I remember. It was called Eggs and Bacon."